Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
どこにいるのかな。全然見えない。
What's good, internet? It's Austin Walker, the editor-in-chief of Vice Gaming. Joining me today, Patrick Klepek, for our inaugural, whatever the name of this podcast is.
Is this a tryout?
This is a tryout.
Fail this?
No, I think you have the gig. I think it's a tryout for the podcast. The podcast might not get the gig.
I think the room that you're recording in might not get the gig. The internet in the office might not get the gig.
This room definitely doesn't get the gig. So, like, we don't have our permanent studio set up yet, or whatever that space will be, here in Brooklyn. I'm coming to you live from Williamsburg, in a bunker, in a basement. So the way the Vice offices work, like, the first floor is where editorial is, and the basement is where, like, all the HBO and Viceland stuff is. Like, Spike Jones has an office within, like, a minute walking from here. It's really
bizarre. He does. I walked past it. I brazenly suggested that it must have just been ceremonial, just one of those things that you put in one of these offices, and they were like, oh, no, Spike comes in. You'll probably see him if you're here more often.
He has a dog. He just brings his dog with him. It's a cute dog. He had it, like, on the desk during, they did this big State of the Union recently where they're just like, what's going on with Vice? What's going on with everything? And he brought his dog to that, and it's, like, a live stream to everyone in all of the offices. And the dog, like, walked on the desk and hit a button and stopped one of their video, like, presentations. It was really good. It was really human. Anyway, so I'm in, like, a VO room. Like, normally you would come down here to do VO for a video feature or something. But, like, there's just a cabinet that my mic is on. My computer is on a chair. It's hot in here. It's not really ventilated. It's a mess.
If you feel as though Austin is losing his mind as the podcast progresses, you have an explanation for the, if you suffer heat stroke halfway through.
Here's another thing. My back is to the door. I hate that. I'm facing a wall. I'm right up against the wall because that's where this cabinet that I'm using as a desk is. And someone could be behind me right now. I have no idea.
We are shattering the illusion that Vice is like this company that has like a bunch of like multi-million dollar investments through this description of a VO box.
You know, it does very well and will be great once we have our space, which is coming. Everything's coming. It's as we're, leading up to launch later this fall, which is super exciting.
Yeah, I guess we should probably at least like Spiegel's probably have an idea, but that like we will not be called Vice Gaming sometime in the near future.
Right.
All things happen as they're supposed to happen.
I don't think we can say what we'll be called yet.
No.
But
you never know.
You never know.
I don't want to jinx anything.
No. No. Jinx is not the name. We're not being called Jinx. That's a different thing.
Oh, that would have been clever though, because then people could have come back.
Right.
Combed through the podcast later and see if we accidentally dropped a hint because we've been thinking about this for way too long, for way too many weeks.
So, and we ended up going with something that was on the table from like literally day one. So I'm excited because we got kind of a thing we wanted, but also it was there. It's been on the table since I started in July. But speaking of names, this doesn't have a name yet, this podcast.
No.
And maybe this will be one of those things where you as listeners can shoot us names that you have an idea for or that you think are good fits.
This is the moment where we realize that we're exhausted with coming up with new names for various things on the site, and maybe you can help us because we can't do it.
One of the things that hurts is like we can't be like, oh, we're the whatever podcast because we can't tell you the name of the site yet. Even we thought about being the Vice City podcast.
If we want to go down the list of like rejected names that broke our hearts, Vice City was the one we fell into when I came out to New York very briefly, and Yeah, let's just say that the legal process has stopped that one pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're like, ha, that's cute. No.
Yeah, I think at the point that you go, ha, it's cute, that's maybe should be your first indication that you're probably on the wrong path.
Yeah. So yeah, if you know, once you get a feel for what this is, and hopefully we'll be able to give you a taste of that today, you know, start shooting us some ideas. Don't shoot us double scoops. We see that one coming. We see you writing right now. Double scoops is not two scoops, none of that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work. It's not, you know, you want something that's sort of like descriptive for like sort of a, you know, a broader theme. Yeah. Like what we're trying to.
Well, you know, I'll give you the kind of guideposts that I wanted for the website's name. Which is, I wanted something that evoked spatiality, like a feeling of a place. I wanted something that had a feeling of exploration and a feeling of interaction and community. So when the name is eventually announced, you can come back at me and be like, yo, Austin, that name doesn't do any of those things. Or like, oh, wow, yeah, totally. That totally lines up.
Look, weeks later, when you've gone down a thesaurus hole for 3 weeks, you know, sometimes you convince yourself that something fits your original goals and you live with it. It's called settling. That's what you do in life.
There was also a letter I really wanted to be at the start of this word, and I looked at every word that had that letter at the start of it twice. I looked literally at an entire dictionary from top to bottom of that letter and like listed all of the words I liked. It starting a website's like a whole thing. Like, this sounds tiny and minor and easy, but like by week three of doing this, you know, for an hour a day, while in the middle of doing other things that are on paper, like feel more important, like figuring out budgets is more important. Figuring out editorial strategy feels in your heart like, oh, I need to be, that's real work. But like figuring out a name is like figuring out an entire identity for your site and for your publication. So it weighs on you as much as making sure that the freelancer content is good, you know? Like it's a big deal, and that's a weird thing to realize.
Well, and it's also, it's not as simple as just finding something you like. You know, I think if it was that,
right,
then the process would have ended a long time ago. It's realizing, you know, when you work for, like, it's the difference between, it's not, you know, huge, I mean, giant bombs, I'm certainly ran into some things, I'm sure,
yes,
like, you know, the sort of legal paperwork that you run into. But, you know, Vice is like a big chain of command with,
yep,
a lot of people that are trying to help us succeed, and they've certainly succeeded, so you want to heed their advice, and that's part of the reason we're excited to work here. But that also introduces lots of bumps along the way of, well, I'm into this, but that person is into this, and then, you know, you're trying to feel your way to something that maintains the identity,
yes,
of everyone along the way, which is sort of, you know, how compromise works, but it takes a long time to get there.
Well, like, this reminds me a lot, actually, of the process of just editing, actually, right? So, you know, you take a look at when someone sends me a pitch for a story idea, the thing that I have to look at is like, okay, like, is this a good story? Is this a story I'm interested in generally? Is this a story that I think the audience is going to be generally interested in? And not just the Vice gaming audience, the wider Vice audience, because right now all of our content is hitting that big audience. Is this going to be something that is digging into an issue that maybe hasn't gotten a lot of attention? Or if it is something that has been given a lot of attention, is it something where there's a new angle here? And then when you get to the editing, it's that same sort of negotiation, that same sort of process of negotiation where I have my like house style for Vice Gaming, but I want to retain the voice of the person who's speaking. It just needs to be in our general like direction that we want to go, and that direction is mostly in line with the vice.com direction, but not exactly in line with it, which is why we're going to be our own separate site down the line. And that whole process is like this interesting negotiation, because at no point you're never saying like, oh, you're wrong, this is bad. And this is the same thing with the name. Like, when you kind of run up the flagpole, it's not like it's coming back down like, oh, that name is just bad. It's just like, oh, that isn't in line with XYZ thing that we as a larger company are looking for. And it's the same thing for,
right,
me as an editor. It's like sometimes I'll reject a pitch, not because I think the story is bad, but because I think that it's not in line with what we want to do. Someone, shout out to the person who did this, pitched me a story that was going to be a rebuttal to your bad games piece. So Patrick last week wrote a thing that was like, it was basically the consumer argument, right? Which is like, oh, actually, it doesn't make sense to play bad games because they're bad and we all have limited resources. So the reason I ended up saying no to that pitch wasn't like, oh, idiot, I disagree with you. Like,
but, you know, you are sort of at a distance having fun with,
yeah,
it. in the ups and downs, and that's how this feels too. You know, I ostensibly I have a vote, but for the part of the debate, I don't.
There's no way to intercede.
There's nothing I can do.
You know, the other thing is like it's live, and anytime like sports, like you know SNL, like doing a live stream on Twitch, like whenever anything is live, there is a certain energy around it. You know, when we used to do the Extra Life marathons at Giant Bomb, there was this sort of like really powerful energy around that moment where it was like, oh, I fucking hope everything goes right. I hope everything goes right. Like, really, anytime we do anything live, there's that vibe of like a million.
Totally.
Like, we sat down to do this podcast. Heads up, in the future, we would like to be able to do this podcast live. And it's a good thing we didn't decide to do that today, because as soon as I sat down, like, I came downstairs to get this VO room, but it had been booked poorly. The internet all fell apart on us. Like, all of these things fell apart around it. And, like, that's not even the podcast. That's not even the thing. That's just the structure around the thing that fell apart.
That's its own separate train wreck.
And so, like, there's all this stuff with this debate tonight that is going to be, you know, everything. Here's the other thing it is, I think, actually. It's the amount of attention that I know is going to be poured into it for the next week. That, like,
yeah,
it's, I'm, like, prepping my body to just be buried in takes. Just bury me in the takes. They're coming. Like, I know there's no...
I'm covering myself in ice, yeah, because the takes are going to be so hot that it's going to go right through me. Like, it's... I'm worried about it. I'm worried if my skin can handle the scorching nature of the takes for the next several weeks.
And I'm terrified it's going to go poorly, right? I guess that's what it comes down to, is that, like, you wrote... So we can actually pivot a little bit here into our second segment. You wrote a piece last weekend, or I guess last Friday is when it went up, on the news that Palmer Luckey had been donating, was $10,000, is what he donated, yes, to an organization aligned with Donald Trump that kind of was focused on shitposting for change.
It was like this group that worked on, used memes and... other sort of, sort of subversive internet tools to sort of like deride Hillary Clinton and to, push along Donald Trump's, presidential
race. Right.
I think the response that, I think there were probably a lot, there are a decent number of people who in the vegan community who, are not liberal.
Sure, of course.
Support Donald Trump, or you have their own reasons for supporting the Republican Party. You know, as part of what I went into the piece was, showing that there are plenty of folks, including folks like Will Wright, who, I think a lot of people would probably think of as maybe not necessarily donating money to Rudy Giuliani, but he has.
Right. I totally would have imagined him being more libertarian than Giuliani. You know?
Yeah, he was Ron Paul 2012 in my head, man. That's how I've always thought about Will Wright. So it just goes to show that, people's public and private lives, public and private views are often different or align with different values. And I think what rubbed people the wrong way about what Palmer Luckey did was the fact that it was done in secret, right? So when you back a campaign, when you express public support, there's sort of a trail for that. There's sort of a way of tracking what's happening. And, certainly in the last 20 years and definitely in the post-Citizen United era, there's an increasing anxiety over the ability for people of a rich persuasion to use dark money to hide the way that they influence the election.
And politics in general, the state of things in general.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this is not just on the presidential level. Like, in fact, if it often happens much more often on sort of like the local and state level where people are not really looking. But anyway, it's when you combine an extremely divisive candidate like Donald Trump, and whatever, I'll grant that also Hillary Clinton as well, but the sort of lines that divide people on Donald Trump are often along gender and race and things that get people really fired up. So the fact that Palmer Luckey, who was a creator, a co-creator, or less than that if you want to believe some of the some of the more seedier commentary about the origins of VR, I think people, he's inspired a lot of people that VR is here, that like the thing that we've been dreaming, a lot of people have been dreaming about since the, the 70s, since watching Tron, is now about to become not only a reality, but like a mainstream accepted sort of like technological revolution. And that, someone like him would be doing that on the side really rubbed a lot of people, with players and developers.
Well, you know, and there's this overlap between a lot of things that I think helps dig that deeper under the armor, right? Like, really gets under your skin, is that, like, it isn't just that he donated money to the campaign. He donated money to a group that uses memes to try to affect change. It's not just that he posted on Reddit saying that he did this. Again, there's a really great Daily Beast story that runs down all of this stuff and even gets quote from him directly admitting to this, which is really, as a reporter, is like substantial and shocking that he went on the record.
Well, and what I found was shocking about it was that he sort of lackadaisically just confirmed it. I think that is reflective of maybe how he felt about his involvement, is like, oh, I'm just doing a thing on the internet. It's right. No big deal. And like, that stuff holds a lot more weight when you're a, you know, I don't think we actually know his worth, but it is hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right. Of the Facebook buyout, I believe he received $700 million. So we don't know what his total worth is, but like, that's a lot of money.
Yes.
Well, and so the there's also just this, like, there is, in this strategy and in the politics here, like, a sort of disregard for the – I want to make sure I phrase this right, because I'm not trying to – like, this isn't a personal attack here. But in the politics that he's presented here, there is a disregard for people who can be affected by big moneyed interests, while at the same time he's released a product this year that is, like, a hyper luxury item for people who can barely, you know, who for people who can afford $800 machines, right, or $2,000 computers, and has gone on the record to talk about how VR is supposed to be this great big change for the future.
It's supposed to make people's lives.
I mean, he's specifically even said that it's supposed to make, like, oh, of course, people in the developing world will love VR because they'll want to escape reality. And like, fuck, dude.
Or you have VR being used for, you know, ways of trying to help people combat phobias or folks that have post traumatic stress disorder. So like, they're like, you know, you have that on this side, and the dichotomy of that is a $700 million corporate executive subversively using internet tactics that are associated with the disgusting alt-right movement that are primarily targeting, memes that go after, like, marginalized folks. Like, that's just – it's an extremely uncomfortable look when you start following
and
the
then
whole
there's
trail.
This
from the rhetoric,
right. And then
to
there's
action.
This convergence too of the politics, where he is the libertarian dream, right? He is the in a sense, he represents the thing that people want to say – that people in those groups especially want to say is the American dream. It's like, oh, he was like a young upstart boy genius. Like, he was like, he came in from the outside. He disrupted this space. He kicked off this giant, you know, economic revolution in the space of VR, and he did it by himself. And then when you read the things that are like, and again, we can't validate the claims that are out there. And to kind of briefly summarize these claims, it's things like that, Oculus, Palmer had to go to Valve and kind of borrow some of their technology to address things like the kind of like seasickness, disassociative stuff that was happening with early builds of the Oculus Rift. We can't substantiate that, but that claim is out there. And in general, we know that lots of people built the Oculus Rift, right? Like, lots of people work on any piece of technology. And that is one of those things that actually runs head first into this myth of these, you know, garage-based, single, like, young boy genius inventor myth that is so intrinsic to selling that dream, selling the dream of anyone can do anything if they try hard enough. And because of that, we should cut taxes. We should, you know, not worry about having a social safety net. We should really just encourage kind of judge individuals instead of judging systems and structures. Like, all of that stuff is caught up in this dude. And so I think there's a lot of baggage that is being addressed and is being maybe not even directly addressed, but like, is caught up in the emotional response here. Like, here is this dude who is supposed to represent the fact that anyone can make it in America. And also he is like aligned with the dude who wants to make sure only certain folks can make it in America. And that is a really stark realization to see those two forces are actually aligned.
Yeah, and then so that's what sort of prompted me to kind of walk. You know, there was a lot of great reporting. You know, the Daily Beast, Vice's sister site Motherboard did a lot of great analysis as well, tracking sort of some of the developers and their responses to it. And then sort of my piece was sort of angling like why was this getting, you know, under people's skin, and sort of walking folks through that. And I think the question that a lot of folks that, you know, try to be socially conscious were faced was, you know, what do you do when you're excited about Oculus Rift, when you're excited about VR, when maybe you were thinking about or own, you know, an Oculus Rift, or we're going to get one eventually? Like, how is this supposed to make you feel? How is this supposed to or not change the calculus on supporting or being excited for this? And I think, you know, it's tough because, you know, if you deeply examine pretty much any consumer habit, you're going to find that you are, you know, consciously or inadvertently supporting awful things. That is sort of part of the nature of the world, that you sort of have to, you know, you find some things that you can control and other things that you just have to live with. And that, I think that's what's made a lot of people uncomfortable, is how do you reconcile being tremendously excited about VR while also realizing that while he already may be mega rich, like, is it inappropriate for you to support his ability to become even more rich off of your interest in the technology that he was a part of, but also, again, was only a part of? Like, hundreds, thousands of people were part of the Oculus Rift consumer, you know, version that shipped this year. He did not toil in a room by himself doing that. It is, you know, that was a lot of people with a lot of hard work whose image is blemished by his actions. And I think that's a really complicated question to kind of work.
Totally. And it's one of those things where I think we'd be wise to be generous with the response here and the way people respond. Like, the response to this shouldn't be a litmus test for whether or not you're a good person. There was a really good tweet by Felix Kramer, who is kind of a, God, they're like a video game industry fixer. Is kind of my, they're like the Harvey, you know, Harvey Keitel's character, the Wolf in Pulp Fiction. I kind of imagine Felix as a fixer who just like parachutes in and makes things better, and then like goes off to another project to do that. They write, remember, if you aren't quitting your job at a company founded by a walking garbage fire because you need to eat, that's okay. This isn't on you. You know, people need to feed their families, people need to pay their bills, and people need to be able to do a real and thoughtful calculus, which is, how do I make sure that my ethical views on the world, my political views, are things that I can pursue while at the same time, like, making sure my family doesn't starve? And that's a...
Well, I mean, I went through that myself.
Fairly recently.
You know, in the last 18 months of my life, you know, I worked for... what was it? Gizmodo Media now, I think, is what they renamed Gawker Media to. But I mean, that was absolutely a case where, you know, I took a job in which I reconciled my feelings with what Gawker Media had sometimes chosen to do as an organization by trying to do good work that reflected what I wanted to put out into the world, and realizing that, you know, I was, you know, my wife was pregnant. I was planning to buy a house. I had to buy a new car. Like, I had things I had to do. And I, you know, at the end of the day, I have to support my family. That's, you know, the number one
priority.
Which
doesn't mean that you're like going to be a hitman, right? Like, there is a calculus that happens here. And ideally what you're doing is taking, you know, you're making changes where you can, right? So here's like a behind the scenes thing. It's like, when I took this job, I got emailed a bunch of times from people who said, like, hey, Austin, I have this problem with Vice. Hey, Austin, I have that problem with Vice. Hey, Austin, I'm surprised you'd go to Vice. Like, here are a handful of things that I deeply disagree with that they've done over the years. And my response to that was always like, all right, well, like, one, first of all, understand that when I'm at Giant Bomb, like, I was at CBS, which is this massive company where my presence will never be felt. Like, I don't care how good my review of Homefront the Revolution is. Nothing I write is ever going to make it so that Les Moonves doesn't say he's happy that Donald Trump is getting support because it's good for ratings. Like, that's never going to change. Yeah. Whereas here at Vice, like, I'm in a position now where my voice is in a lot of interesting meetings where lots of people are, and I can help change the culture here, and I can help push it in directions that I'm really excited about. And I see other people doing that too. Like, even in the couple of months I've been here, there have been really great steps taken by people at Vice to address things that when I came in, I thought might have been problems, you know? And so that is like one of the things you have to decide as an employee under capitalism is like, where can I make the changes I can? Where can I have positive effect? Which is not a get out of jail free card for people who are like, hey, fuck it. Like, let Palmer Luckey do whatever the fuck he wants. I don't care. Like, give me those bills. Like, I'm just here to make bank. And like, okay, well, maybe be a little more thoughtful than that. But there is a spectrum of responses here that I think are totally legitimate. And while I totally am, you know, well, I totally support the developers like Polytron and Kokoromi who have said, like, oh, Super Hypercube isn't going to come to the Oculus Rift now. I'm not judging developers who are like, well, we've just spent, we took out $200,000 in loans to make an Oculus Rift game. We need to pay that money back. Like, I get that also.
Yeah, and I actually thought Insomniac Games had, like, a pretty thoughtful response to the whole ordeal, which basically was to condemn the action, but also, you know, they've made a significant investment in VR and placed mm-hmm. a bet on Oculus and, you know, have enjoyed the relationship they've had with that company. And they, you know, that's, you know, as far as corporate responses to things yeah. like that, that's, you know, I think what people crave yeah. is acknowledgement of the emotional
response. So Insomniac writes, they wrote, Insomniac Game condemns all forms of hate speech. While everyone has a right to express his or her political opinion, the behavior and sentiments reported do not reflect the values of our company. We are also confident that this behavior and sentiment does not reflect the values of many of the many Oculus employees that we work with on a daily basis, which is like, it's just words, but those are some pretty good words, you know?
Yeah, because like it throws shade while also sort of doing exactly what we were talking about. Was like not it's giving cover to the folks that, you know, the engineer that is out there working that, you know, cannot talk publicly without losing their job, but privately feels, you know, disgust right. over what's happening. Like it tries to shine a light in that direction to say like, hey, like this is more complicated than Oculus supports right. Donald Trump, right? Like that's not the story.
You
know, that's the feeling you can get that feeling from the headlines and the reaction. But that is not necessarily, Palmer Luckey does not speak for all the people who work under him or along.
Well, I mean, that even goes back to stuff that we've been talking about on and off all year with things like the Deus Ex Mankind Divided marketing stuff, where it's like, man, I've played that game and I know that there are people on that team that are really, that they have thought deeply about this stuff because that stuff shows up in a lot of the side content, like actual discussions about, you know, systemic police racism or militarized policing or lots of stuff like that, like, is in that game and is not reflected by what was a really basic marketing strategy that kind of used buzzwords to generate heat. Or even with there was another market. What was the other marketing thing this year that was just like really – or even just the No Man's Sky marketing, right, which was like if you were just an engineer at Hello Games and like could feel the hype and buzz building around that game, there were just some marketing decisions there that – I can imagine you feeling bad about, like if you're just in the trenches, so to speak, being like, well, fuck. And then, of course, you saw Shuhei Yoshida kind of threw that whole team under the bus in an
Jeez,
interview.
Yeah. Like acting as though Sony wasn't, a total active actor in creating the marketing for that game by making it a sort of a central piece of what the PlayStation was for the better part of a year and a half. Like that, you know.
Me too.
I like Shuhei Yoshida a lot, but
he said
that rubbed me the wrong way.
He said, this is with an interview with Eurogamer, I believe. Shuhei Yoshida, who is the president of Sony Worldwide Studios, though I think there might be a second president. Like the organization at Sony Worldwide is just such a weird thing at this point, or at Sony Interactive Entertainment. He says, I understand some of the criticisms, especially Sean Murray is getting, because he sounded like he was promising more features in the game from day one. It wasn't a great PR strategy because he didn't have a PR person helping him. And in the end, he is an indie developer. But he says that their plan to continue to develop No Man's Sky's features and such, and I'm looking forward to continue playing the game. And just like, y'all were involved. It's not like you didn't have a chance to intercede and make sure that pitch wasn't, like, I don't know. Obviously, we don't know. We don't know what the backroom deals were. We don't know what the contracts say. Maybe there was a clause that was like, no, like, Hello Games handles all that shit completely in-house. But there are, Sean Murray was on a lot of PlayStation stages, you know?
Yes.
And at that point, there's like, at least take collaborative blame. At least be like, So I can really imagine this year that there's been all these cases of just like, oh, someone at a really high level has made a decision that doesn't.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Not necessarily reflect what my interests are or even what my talent is or what I've done successfully here. And that must be really frustrating, especially if you're in the VR space where this feels like a make or break year. I think next year is really a make or break year because like if things don't take off by next holiday season, then we're going to be in a real place. But this holiday season is pretty important too, especially with like PSVR about to launch. And I'm really, if I was a VR developer and I sat through that Sony event last month and didn't see them put PSVR on that stage, which is their last event, as far as I know, to make that pitch to the public, I would, again, feel like a little shitty.
Yeah, and Sony has a really poor track record with selling accessories. You know, that's that has been their MO, has been to, you know, put out these devices that, you know, have really flashy announcements. And then if they underperform, it's suddenly they pretend that that stuff never existed. And it's too bad because part of what I've been excited about Sony's investment in VR is that as a consumer company, like they are used to launching things and selling things, you know, like the Vice was, or the Vive was, you know, very haphazard and a very Valvian sort of way of launching a product. The Oculus, you know, it seemed like they were building a company as they were building this device, right? Like building a development infrastructure, and like they were just, they were doing a lot of things on the fly that.
Right. And they ran into some problems with things like the shipping or like the kind of like the product flow, which hopefully Sony, because they have all of those factories, they understand what the flow should be from factory to shipment to retail. Like, they're in a better place to address all of that stuff.
Yeah, it just scares me because I've been a huge proponent of VR for years. I've been excited for this moment, and it just, you know, I don't want to kind of eggs before they hatch, but it's just it makes me nervous because it's really easy for it to all go wrong. And I think the one thing I will say is that in some ways VR already won because the biggest obstacle to being able to enjoy VR the way we are about to now, even if everything just shut down in early 2017, now for, you know, $800 or less, depending on the kind of sliding scale of what kind of device you want to buy, you can buy consumer grade excellent VR that you mm-hmm. can plug into a PlayStation 4 or your PC. And that just didn't exist a couple of years ago because people weren't putting in the investment to make that something that the, you know, it's still a luxury item, but it is within reach for the average person that, it, you know, considers this technology and games a hobby. And
right.
So even
they can start putting money aside at least, right?
Yeah.
Like when you get the, back when Sony announced the price of the VR, if you, or of the PlayStation VR, if you had a PS4 already, you could immediately I'm going to start my VR fund. Every month I'm going to put away $50 and by the time it launches, I should be good to go, you know?
And regardless of what happens with PlayStation, VR will continue to be a thing on PC. I think what's at stake going forward is what I think a lot of people would love to see out of VR are, you know, studios investing big money into, you know, VR sort of experiments and little small games are definitely awesome, amazing. It's sort of it's the fuel of any new technology. But you know, I love playing experiences that clearly tens of millions of dollars and thousands of hours were put into to give me sort of like the best in class, ambitious, amazing mm-hmm. looking artist slaving over all this. That's what I want out of VR too. And I think that's what's in danger of slipping away is if it's not mainstream, a way that companies can reliably make money. That stuff's gonna that's just not going to happen, or it's going to be only fueled by Sony themselves, you know, wanting to put in the money. And that's the reports I have heard from developers I've talked to for, you know, the better part of a year, is that, you know, companies like Sony aren't investing a whole lot, like less than you would think, in funding games for VR for what, you know, seems like a fairly big part of the company's initiatives for, you know, the next 12 months at least, or at least certainly leading up to, you know, VR and PS4 Pro are, you know, sort of like the pivot points to whatever the PS5 is, whether that's next year or 2 years from now. And lots of developers I've talked to have rolled their eyes at the amount of money that Sony is offering to create VR experiences, which explain why you see something like Batman VR, whatever that's called, from Rocksteady, where it's like, it's yes, the aesthetically it looks really interesting, but mechanically it's pretty simple, and you know that still may be fine, but it's not something you're going to invest a ton of time in. And while I don't know the exact development history of that game, so I don't want to speak to that if it doesn't apply, but it would fall in line with what I've heard for the past 12 months or so of Sony trying to strike deals but not giving you much money to do more than something pretty modest.
Yeah. And so I mean, the thing I kind of have two thoughts here, which is like, one, I really hope the PSVR does well, because I actually think in terms of feel, it is the headset that fits me the best, and that I think it's like a really high quality, and the process of putting it on is
beautiful. Once when you have done the worst experience, which is the Vive, and then you go to the PlayStation VR, you're like, oh right, like this is a company that understands ergonomics.
Here's like the most celebrationist thing you'll ever hear me say. Putting that thing on is like putting on the Iron Man suit. Like it clicks and clunks, and then you have an adjuster that you just like squeeze in the right way, and like it has been built. Their ergonomic design is a difficult thing and is an art, like to where someone feels like someone in Sony HQ like wanted you to feel like you were transforming when you put this thing on. I had just had my first experience with it recently at PAX. I got to play Res Infinite, which is the new 4K update to Res, and also has a VR mode, and it also has this thing called Area X, which, again, I'm a VR. If you're a VR optimist, I'm a VR pessimist, or at least a VR skeptic, which is to say that most of the VR experiences I've had have been like, okay, cool. Like up until now, my favorite VR experience was the one time it failed in a really cool way, where like I was doing a demo with a guy from Oculus. It was an Oculus Touch demo, and his side desynced with mine, and I could see what he was doing, but he couldn't see me. And so it was just this moment of like beautiful cyberpunk terror as I just was a weird goat, like digital ghost voyeur. It was the best. And it was like, oh, okay, you could totally tell weird stories with this thing. But then I played Area X, which is, for people who haven't played Res, think about like Star Fox or Panzer Dragoon. It's kind of an on-rail shooter where you're kind of collaborating with the musical track of each level as you attack things. You kind of do a lock-on attack like Panzer Dragoon, and then release, and then you fire all these blasts out. And it's just like electronic music, and it's beautiful. And even playing that in the VR was great, because you could do the thing where you're looking all around looking all around the environment, taking shots at things behind you, all of that. But in Area X, which is a new, like, micro game, 20 to 30 minutes long, somewhere in there, you go off the track and you can, like, control your own speed. You can go forward or backward. You can explore these spaces. And it was just like, it's the first time I took off a headset with chills. And I don't want to dig too deep into this stuff because I used to be on a podcast where we talked about VR all the time, and I know people hate it. So I don't want to, like, keep going down this path, but, like, Area X was the first thing. Area X, again, being the kind of new Res Infinite content. It's the first time I've ever left VR being like, oh, you couldn't do this way without VR. It was even to the point where I talked to Mizuguchi about this, and I kind of asked him, like, this is so much more than what Res is in terms of the kind of synesthetic overload, right? There's so much happening. Are you afraid at all that players aren't going to be able to keep up with it? That Res is this on-rails thing. It's kind of a leap of faith that you're going from on-rails to off-rails and expect players to still have the same, not cinematic, but kind of synced experience because you can't control what they see anymore. They can go anywhere. And his response was like, basically, like the protagonist of Res, I believe players have evolved to kind of be in line with this. They're ready to do this and will continue to evolve and learn how to play games in this way that's really enjoyable for them. And that was just like, oh, okay, yeah. So I am like rooting for the PSVR at this point only because of Res Infinite. Like, that made me, at least for this little corner of the world, a believer. The second thing here is that in some ways, I think I am totally with you that VR has made it, but not only because it is going to be here for a while now that there are consumer devices, but I think that there is, I'm surprised I didn't see this take, which is the fact that everyone is upset about Palmer Luckey proves that VR has arrived. If Palmer Luckey had come out like this 3 years ago, who?
Yeah.
Who cares? Who's the, oh yeah, he's doing some weird Kickstarter thing. But the fact that this was like huge news on Twitter and gaming Twitter is like perhaps a sign of the times that we care about him as much as we care. If Bobby Kotick had done this, who cares, right? If any big, super big, maybe not who cares, people would care, but it wouldn't feel like this weird betrayal in this way.
I think it also goes to show, I think people in their mind already sort of think of Bobby Kotick as kind of a supervillain, already.
Totally. Totally.
That he's just like, oh, of course, rich white guy is going to act that way. You know, I don't mean to necessarily cast aspersion on him personally. I just think it fits sort of like a mental map of what we think he is and how he has acted in the past. Whereas I think Palmer Luckey, I think people are just genuinely surprised. Part of fueling the response is this feeling of betrayal of our own expectations,
right,
over like what we think this guy is or what he represents. And also the fact that because he's this, as you're talking about sort of like the boy genius myth, he is a representative of VR in a way that the average fan is not. And I think, as we lead into, this fall, which is like, the biggest push for this technology as sort of like a non-joke, I think a lot of the anxiety is out of this risk of like, well, you're going to screw this up for everybody,
yeah,
dude.
And that to me is both, it's both like, oh yeah, totally. And also, oh, that means that enough people actually care about VR to have a response to this. And like, if I was in that marketing room, that is the angle I would be like, all right, everybody calm down. This is just really bad, obviously.
Look,
we're trending.
Doubt
we have to walk this back.
We're trending.
But we're trending, and then they pull out the collar. it's a weird situation this year. I think for a lot of reasons, things are charged all over. And it is, may we live in interesting times, right?
Yeah. We should also make sure and plug that we just had a VR doc.
We did.
About a week and a half ago. Maybe.
Yeah. It was a VR doc that began over in the UK. So shout outs to Vice Gaming's UK editor, Mike Diver, and the team there who kicked things off with it. And then it launched last week. It is called Stepping Into the Screen, I believe, is the title of it. I should know the titles of the things that go up on my site.
It went through, you know, as we have all gotten started here at Vice, and as we all, you know, wrap our head around to working on a lot of different things that were not usually our purview, just because of the way that the ambitions that Vice has for gaming. We also came into a lot of things midstream.
Yes.
So his VR doc was one of them.
Yep.
So you can excuse Austin for not remembering the name, because that name may have changed 15 times.
It changed 15 times. I mean, it was a really interesting process, because when we made that VR doc, the first cut of it, I have no problem like being transparent about this. Like, the first cut was pretty celebrationist, and it was pretty much like, VR is here. VR is the future. VR is revolutionary. And as people who you know, want to talk about the future of games and about the culture of games and about everything else around it, we wanted to make sure that we were making claims in that video that were accurate. Like, did we really feel like VR was the future, or that it had revolutionized or would definitely revolutionize things? And after like some critical thought, I think we took a step back and said, like, no, we are hoping that it might do those things, but in reality, there are all these unanswered questions. How do developers deal with the fact that for some people, VR has a disassociative reaction, or that it gives them seasickness, or that it is expensive, or that it, you know, all these other questions. How do they design games knowing that the physical response to a jump scare for VR is not the same as the physical response to a jump scare on a TV? And so we kind of shifted in that direction. We talked to a medical expert. We did all of this stuff to like kind of make it a little more ambivalent, not negative. Like, it's still, you know, we still talk about a lot of what VR does really well and
critical,
but critical, exactly. Critical in the way that you and I often mean critical, which just means like thoughtful and, you know, trying to check ourselves, reflective. And so definitely go check that out. That's on vice.com/gaming, where you can find all of the stuff that we do right now. By the end of the fall, though, let me tell you, it's going to be a new site. New site, new name.
It's one of the, like, to speak towards some of the ambition of Vice Gaming that has been, or I guess Vice is a company that has been really fascinating, has been, so one of the things that Vice does is they, we have so many different arms around the world that our content doesn't just get content.
There it is. There it is.
I've been looking at too many corporate things. But, you know, the stuff that we write not only gets propagated elsewhere, but gets translated elsewhere. Like, there are people that hand translate articles I write, and then they get published other places. And so I love on Twitter hearing from folks that are like, hey, so I just read your article in Italian. Uh-huh. Yep. And I was like, I've never had something like that before. It's super cool, and it's, you know, it's kind of wild to think, because I don't, you know, I'm certainly was not thinking of the articles I write for an Italian mm-hmm. audience. I don't know if I would do anything different if I was, but it's kind of amazing when folks have reached out and given me links to that stuff, and then I see like other comments happening that I cannot read or being machine translated by Google Translate. It's like, wow, like, there are conversations happening about the things I've said somewhere that I never intended or even had even thought of.
Which is amazing, which is really fantastic. And like, it is really cool to come in one morning and be like, oh, what's our top story? Oh man, Brazil is eating this up. Like, cool, awesome. Like, that's rad. Yeah. And that, it's really nice to be part of a company that's doing all of that. So, you know, what comes next for us, Patrick?
Well, what comes next would be fan, if we could find, if a fan is out there.
Are there fans?
Make yourself known.
No, speak up. This is like a seance right now.
Approach the microphone, please.
Is it on? Is this microphone on?
Yeah, that's okay. Close enough. Well, we're fans of ourselves. So I guess we'll just have to deal with that. But this would be the moment where we, I think the idea is that you know, we would like folks to send in questions. And we will try and pick one that I think like would, you know, prompt, you know, a 10 to 15 minute discussion, as opposed to sort of like running down 10, 15 emails and kind of just sniping through those. I think the idea is like, we want to try and, you know, have sort of like meaty, interesting discussions in each parts of the podcast. So I guess we would ask people to start thinking of that, because, yeah, I mean, the goal, you know, don't hold us to this yet, because we're still figuring everything out, and Austin gets pulled into a million meetings as we lead up into the launch the website. But yeah, the hope is that we're going to do this Mondays and Fridays, sort of aping the format for Bomb in the AM that I did with Alex Navarro back over at Giant Bomb, so that, you know, we can kind of like kick off your week and end your week with, you know, sort of like 45-minute hour long podcast. And the goal, we need to work through some internet issues on Austin's side, but the goal is that, so again, don't hold us to it, but the goal, maybe it's possible this will get delayed till when we have a studio and we have a little more control over things, but the hope is that we can do this live in the same way I did that with Alex, so that, you know, we could also take questions from people, and you can have a conversation while the podcast is happening. So that's that is kind of the goal, but again, to be determined.
To be determined. Here's one. This one comes in from CMASEKAR on Twitter. I think Shirag.
Sure.
He says, "Hey, dude, weird question. Do you know any games with an R&B soundtrack?" This came in 22 hours ago. I didn't just ask Twitter. Don't worry, Patrick.
R&B's.
But, like, not exclusively.
A lot of hip-hop.
Lots of hip-hop.
Like, yeah.
I think...
What was that? The EA fighting game?
Def Jam? There's a bunch of Def Jam games, but none of those... All of those are just hip-hop. I think a lot of the GTA games will have some R&B in there. I'm sure that Vice City, again, not the name of this podcast as much as I wish it was, had a radio station that was going... There was a lot of 80s R&B. Same thing with San Andreas, and then probably with 4 and 5, too. But, like, not, like, a determined R&B soundtrack. Which is a shame.
I just did a Google search to see if I could... If there's anything that would come up, but no. Everything just points me to hip-hop. This is a... hey, game developers are always looking for a new angle. R&B.
There's a Wikipedia page called List of Video Game Soundtracks Considered the Best, and I feel like that's out of the purview of Wikipedia, frankly.
Well, okay, wait. Does SingStar R&B
count? Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
I want to see what the track list is for this.
SingStar R&B. Here we go.
Luther Vandross, Salt-N-Pepa, Rihanna, Jamiroquai. What year? Well, if we're Amy Winehouse Back to Black, then I guess we're talking that. I feel like that probably sets our SingStar was also
it was
a big
huge
thing in like 2003 to 2008.
Yeah,
like PS2 era and PS3 era.
Some bootylicious.
That's not that great. I'm not sure this
Summertime
counts.
Is on this list. I don't know if that's R&B. I think that's hip hop.
I think it might be R&B.
Oh, okay. Yes. Gotcha. God. Yeah. So, hey, do that. If you're a developer, give me that game with a hot R&B jam.
But I guess, I don't know, is that the end of the podcast?
Normally we'll have a question that's a little more like something we could chew on, but I reached out to Twitter. I was like, there has to be someone who has said @Austin_Walker question in the last 24 hours. Let me see if there is. And there was. So thank you to Shirag again for reaching out with that question.
So I guess did any real preparation, we would have an email address that you could send questions to, but we don't.
You can send questions to gamingadvice.com.
Oh, okay.
Look at that. Boom.
Look at that. Okay. We are more prepared than I thought. All right. Send questions to gamingadvice.com.
Put the word question in the subject, which will help me see it. Please.
Yeah, Austin needs all the help he can get right now.
Trust. I do. Where can people find you on the internet, Patrick?
They can find me at Patrick Klubik. Paste that into any social network unless I forgot to register it, in which case someone else will have done it, and then occasionally those people will be kind enough to give it back to me.
Has anyone ever held it for ransom?
I purchased the patrickklubik.com domain years and years ago and then let it lapse because I had no reason to really have it other than just to sit on it.
Yeah.
And then... someone grabbed it when it expired, and then they emailed me. They turned it. They made it as a forward to. I can't remember what it was. It was pretty funny. It was like a really nice person. But then I was like, hey, maybe I should just take that back, and they transferred it over. So fortunately, it was not a horror story.
That's good. And you can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter. And for now, at least, advice.com/gaming, where I wish I had more time to write. But as Patrick said, I'm constantly being pulled into meetings. Should be some good stuff coming this week, though. I have a pretty big interview I'd like to transcribe today or tomorrow, and I'd like to get that up this week. A lot of great freelancer stuff coming this week. Anything big you want to shout out coming up?
Probably, but nothing I want to commit to.
I got you. I know how it is.
Oh, and thanks to Bo-N for letting us use his track Miss You from the EP Pale Machine, our podcast theme.
So, all right, tune back in on Friday when, you know, we'll try to do another one of these and we can talk about whatever happened this week. I think that's, we got to figure out a sign out. How do you sign out of podcasts, Patrick?
That's not.
And then what we do is music comes in.
Yeah. We just imagine there's music coming in.
Now.
And voices are okay.
We're fading.
We're fading?
We're fading. And now we're gone.
ああ。